fighting for America.
This country is long overdue for a discussion about the tragic intersection of an over-militarized law enforcement establishment with people of color.
Fighting for Idaho.
It is outrageous that some would use partisan political theatrics to rip away at the very fabric of our state's constitution.
Fighting for you.
I recently got married and I've turned my wife, who's a rabid Boise State fan, into a Paul Feinbaum fan.
Well, I want to congratulate you, Kevin. I mean, you were Birmingham's most eligible bachelor 15 years ago, and I'm surprised it took this long in Idaho.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We go live to the Middle East for our great friend Emily Wither joining us. Emily, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Well, not too bad, but you're the one living in the challenging neighborhood. What's the latest there in Israel?
The fighting is still going on between the Israelis and the Palestinians. The rocket fire continues from Gaza. The Israelis are still carrying out airstrikes. And in the last couple of hours, a rocket has hit an open area of Tel Aviv. A rocket also hit a synagogue in southern Israel, causing extensive damage and injuring a couple of people. So it's still very tense here. The Israelis seem to have changed their tactic, though, slightly. Instead of carrying out various airstrikes across the Gaza Strip, they seem to be trying to pinpoint Hamas leaders. And in the last 24 hours, they've killed three top Hamas commanders, believed to be some of the major masterminds for the fighting that we've seen recently coming out of Gaza, and also the building of those tunnels that the Israelis have been trying to destroy. This has led to a crackdown inside Gaza from Hamas, because we have to ask ourselves, when Israel targets these buildings, how did the military know to strike that particular four-story house in a densely populated neighborhood in Gaza at that particular time? And, you know, often it's because of the help of a network of local informers. And Hamas seemed to be cracking down on some of these suspected Israeli collaborators. And they have killed, let me just check for the latest figure, 18, because these killings have been taking place throughout the morning, Kevin. So in total now, 18 alleged spies for Israel have been killed. And in one instance, 7 were lined up behind a mosque and just shot. This isn't the first time, though, that Hamas have killed informers inside Gaza. They've done it in the past, and often they do it publicly because they want to send a warning out to people in Gaza that this is what happens if we think you're working for the enemy.
Well, and the idea that they shot them behind the mosque, I'm thinking to myself, you know, where is the religious tolerance? I guess there isn't any.
Well, this is a different case in the sense that if you're suspected of working for the Israelis as a local, it's punishable by death inside Gaza. And these public executions, as I said before, have happened in the past because they want to try and stop other Palestinians from collaborating with the Israelis. And, you know, you have to imagine it's incredibly brave if you're a Palestinian living in Gaza and you're passing on information to Israelis about the whereabouts of various Hamas commanders, where these tunnels are, where weapons are being hid. And, you know, obviously the Israelis have drones that buzz all day long over Gaza trying to gather information. When I was in Gaza, the buzz of those drones was constant. I couldn't get it out of my head for days after leaving there. But as well as this type of information gathering, they do use these informers to help them on the ground. And in a way, some of the ways they get to help make these informers help them is through blackmail. Or sometimes they even dangle exit permits to try and secure their support. But this is believed to be quite a vast network, and this crackdown that we've seen today, Hamas say, is only the beginning, and it's going to be part of a new crackdown looking out for potential informers going forward.
Emily, what's life like there for the average Israeli?
Life is a little bit difficult at the moment. I mean, many people are still going to work and are carrying on with normal life, but I was speaking to some Israelis earlier, actually, and they said the impact on the economy of this conflict is now starting to be felt. It's been going on for over a month now. And if you're living in the south of Israel, many businesses are just simply struggling because they haven't been able to operate at normal capacity. Many, many events have been cancelled this summer, like open-air concerts or, you know, various gatherings. I mean, the Israelis have pretty much banned large gatherings in public because of the threat that these could be targeted by rocket fire from Gaza. Add to that as well, the tourism industry here, which the economy heavily relies on, particularly over the summer months when people usually come and visit here, has been hit massively. I mean, noticeably, the streets are quieter here in Israel at the moment, especially in Jerusalem, which is usually packed with tourists in August. Hotels are reporting that bookings are down. Airlines are flying here half empty. And the longer this conflict continues, the more impact, I think, will be felt on the economy as more and more people cancel their vacations here. But also, as I said, businesses aren't able to operate the same way that they were. Stuff like this also affects investment in Israel too. So even though ordinary Israelis, many of them can carry on, it seems as if in the coming months the after effects of this conflict will be felt more and more, particularly in their pockets.
Emily, thank you, and please be careful.
Thank you.
All right. Our friend Emily Wither, live from Israel here, joining us now, best-selling author Ron Kessler. Ron, good to have you with us.
Hey, good to be with you.
Let's talk a little bit about your life detailing the Secret Service, the first book, First Family Detail. The second one, the idea of the Secret Service agent revealing hidden lives about the president. You're getting a lot of buzz about this, and, gee, it's a coincidence people are attacking you for it.
Exactly. But actually, you know, over two-thirds of the book is on the record. There are many on-the-record quotes from agents who've been on, for example, Hillary Clinton's detail about how nasty she is, the fact that being assigned to her detail is considered a form of punishment and the worst assignment in the Secret Service. And that's really a clue to character. And the book is nonpartisan. It says that Barack Obama and Michelle Obama do treat their agents with respect, although agents are dismayed to overhear Michelle urge her husband to be more aggressive in attacking Republicans and siding with blacks in racial controversies, which we've seen over and over, even though Obama doesn't know the facts of the case when he wades into these controversies. But it also has disclosures about, for example, the Reagan White House staff overruling the Secret Service to allow spectators within 15 feet of Reagan when he came out of the Washington Hilton, and that's why John Hinckley was able to shoot Reagan. The Secret Service didn't want any people in the area, and the White House staff, you know, wanted some PR opportunity, and that's why he was shot, and it's been covered up until now by the Secret Service. The book goes back to JFK and Johnson. Johnson was the most gross individual you can imagine. He would sit in the toilet and defecate in front of aides. He would, when he went into Air Force One, immediately strip naked even in front of his daughters. He would hold press conferences at his ranch in Texas and urinate in front of reporters, including female reporters. One agent said if he weren't president, he would be in a mental hospital. But I think the most shocking disclosure in the book is that Joe Biden, when he goes back to Wilmington, to his home, which he does sometimes several times a week at our expense on Air Force Two, orders the military aide with the nuclear football to remain at least a mile behind in the motorcade. He wants to craft this image of the regular Joe, a man of the people, so he doesn't want a big, long motorcade. But the result, obviously, is if Obama were taken out or could not perform his duties, we would be totally defenseless because there would not be time for the football to catch up with Biden in order to launch a retaliatory strike. And without that football that Biden has or Obama has, there's no way that we can launch a counterstrike. So colossal lack of judgment.
What kind of person joins the Secret Service?
They have to be pretty laid back, pretty patriotic. you know, because the understanding is you may have to take a bullet for the president. So they're very impressive and dedicated. I know FBI agents admire Secret Service agents more than any other law enforcement officers. But the problem has been that the Secret Service management has this culture of laxness and cutting corners. And I think we saw one symptom of that when the agents hired prostitutes in Colombia, which is a story that I broke. Not that that kind of conduct is common, but those agents, I think, felt, hey, Secret Service management cuts corners that risk an assassination. Why shouldn't we do whatever we want to do? And one example is that under pressure from the White House staff or from campaign staffs, the Secret Service management will let people into events without magnetometer screening, where there's already a line outside, the event is about to start. So they just let them in. Well, you know, they could have five terrorists walk in with grenades and take out the president. Another example in the book, The First Family Detail, is when Bradley Cooper went to the White House Correspondents' Dinner and Obama was about to speak, a high-ranking Secret Service official in New York ordered agents at the Washington Hilton to let Bradley Cooper and his SUV into the secure area in front of the hotel where only Secret Service vehicles were allowed, and even they had to be screened for explosives because anybody could introduce explosives into a vehicle or under a vehicle, whether it was a Secret Service vehicle or Bradley Cooper's vehicle, and take out the president. And you can imagine the dismay of the agents at the scene who were being told to just ignore the most basic security rules as a little favor to Bradley Cooper and his security people.
Ron Kessler with us as we continue on talking about his new bestseller, Dealing with Life as a Secret Service Agent, The First Family Detail, Secret Service Agents Reveal the Hidden Lives of Presidents. What's it like to be the president living in the White House surrounded by folks that are, you know, there to be with him every moment? There really isn't any privacy, is there?
Well, there is when the president is in the residence portion of the White House. The agents don't go there. And also in the Oval Office itself, the agents are outside the Oval Office. Plus, you know, when he's in a hotel room. So it's not as bad as it sounds, I don't think. You know, not that I would want to be guarded by Secret Service agents all the time either. But that is part of what they sign up for when they run for president. And that's something that where they should not be running, in my opinion. You know, if they're going to lead a double life and engage in affairs where they could be blackmailed. And then you have this disparity between the public image of someone like Hillary, who pretends to be this compassionate woman who cares about the little people. She's going to be a champion of the middle class. But in reality, behind the scenes, she treats those very same people with contempt. What does that say about her? What does it say about her character? Isn't that something that we should focus on when we vote for president? Focus on character and track record as opposed to how well they smile on TV and what they promise, because I think if we do that, we're going to be disappointed over and over again.
Ron, can you hang on for a minute?
Sure.
All right.
Your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
All right, Kevin Miller here, 580 KIDO. Ron Kessler with us as we talk about life as a Secret Service agent. What about Bill Clinton, Ron?
Bill has a busty blonde mistress, codenamed unofficially Energizer by his agents. She will show up as soon as Hillary leaves the home in Chappaqua, and agents are instructed not to ask for her name, her ID, or to ask her to sign in, even though Bill's own relatives have to sign in and show their ID. The reason she got her name is that Secret Service code names all begin with the same letter for each family. So in the case of the Clintons, they all begin with E. Hillary is Evergreen. Bill is Eagle. And so the mistress became Energizer. And unlike Hillary, who's so nasty to agents that consider, you know, being assigned to her detail is considered a form of punishment, the mistress is very nice to agents. She'll bring them cookies. One hot summer day, she brought cookies, and she was wearing a low-cut tank top, and she offered the cookies through the window of her vehicle to the agent at the gate, and he noticed that she has enhanced breasts and that they're very perky. So we have every single detail in this book, the first family detail.
How does the press let this go by if this is so obvious?
Well, it's not that obvious at all. I'm really the only journalist who's been able to uncover secrets from the Secret Service. And I think I mentioned that I broke the story of the prostitution scandal in Colombia. Also, the fact that there was a third intruder at the White House along with the Salahis at that state dinner when they crashed the party. But on the other hand, excuse me. Now that the book is out, the mainstream media are ignoring any disclosures that are really damaging to Democrats. And the book is nonpartisan. It has revelations about Republicans as well, but you don't see anything in the mainstream media about Hillary's nastiness or Biden not allowing the nuclear football in the arm, or the disclosure in the book that he engages in skinny dipping in front of female agents who are offended by it, or that these trips back and forth to his home have cost $1 million of our taxpayer money since he took office. It's one thing to go back a few times a year to your home, but he has a vice president's residence here in Washington that we pay for, and there's no reason why we should be paying for these trips, sometimes several times a week, sometimes twice in one day, sometimes just to play golf with Obama at Andrews Air Force Base on Air Force Two, amounting to $1 million. I did a Freedom of Information Act request to get the figures. Biden's office actually intervened to try to suppress the results, but I eventually did get the results, and this is something that the mainstream media should be reporting, and they're not.
I gotta love those FOIA requests. What's it take as far as a family life to be a Secret Service agent? Is there a lot of divorces in the detail?
Yeah, the Secret Service is a very poor place to work because of this management culture of we make do with less, and we're almost masochists. We're gonna make life difficult for our own agents.
It sounds like this place.
Yeah. They don't allow proper scheduling. For example, an agent learns what his schedule for the next week will be on Friday afternoon, so he can never plan. He or she can never plan any social activities. Biden is especially thoughtless about not giving advance warning to agents when he does want to go to Wilmington. He just says, "Okay, I'm going." And so they can never plan their lives either. So it's a very tough life. Morale is low, and it's really sad because, as I say, they are very dedicated people, patriotic people, and they're really being let down by their own management.
The first family detail, Ronald Kessler with us, Kevin Miller here at 580 KIDO. Then why do they do it? And, Ron, can you describe some of the training?
They do it because they understand, I think, that protecting the president is one of the highest callings you can have, because if we have an assassination, that really nullifies democracy. Their training is 16 weeks at the training center in Laurel, Maryland, plus additional training at a federal facility in Georgia. And I was able to go to the training center and watch what they do. They teach them how to make the J-turn with their vehicles, which is 180-degree turn in a matter of seconds. Of course, firearms training, they have scenarios where they try to find the bad guy. They have a mock town, which they call Hogan's Alley. So it's quite intensive and very good.
What about the psychology that we've heard in myth, and you've covered it in reality, about the Secret Service, that they have to be prepared to take a bullet?
That they make the point that, of course, that's not what they want, and that the whole idea is to avoid that. And the way to avoid that is to have very good planning, certainly magnetometer screening, which unfortunately they've been lax about, get the if gunfire does erupt, you know, to evacuate the president immediately, to have everything planned out as to what the best exits are, where safe houses may be in the area. They have a counter assault team in addition to the agents around the president who can step in with heavy arms in case there is an attack. There's also a counter sniper team at key locations where the president may be entering or leaving a hotel, for example. So there's quite a bit that goes into it, plus assessing threats that come in. When threats do come in, they're put into three categories. Class three is considered the most serious, where the person has probably had some firearms training, is serious, and when the president goes to that person's hometown, agents will show up at his door and warn him to stay away from the president and warn him that he'll be watched, and he will be watched until the president leaves. Class one is where someone just blurts out in a bar, "I wish I could kill the president." There's no intent, and probably that person will not be prosecuted because it is a federal crime to threaten the president.
Ron Kessler, the First Family Detail, we appreciate it. We'd love to have you back, sir.
That would be great. I appreciate it.
All right, you're listening to 580 KIDO.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Men, 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 manly men, 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 manly men, men, men,
men, men, men, men, manly men.
And a return to the Manly Man segment session. Kevin Miller, Dave Burnett here at 580 KIDO. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Kevin.
And good to be back. A lot of people were texting me, wondering where I was. I had a chance to go to one of your favorite spots, the Oregon coast, and had a good time there.
Love the Oregon coast. How was the weather?
It wasn't bad. It was funny because yesterday when we were driving back, they said, it's going to be a hot one. It's going to be the burning up. It's going to be upper 90s. And I'm going, upper 90s is hot?
Amazing. I think upper 90s is hot.
Well, compared to here, though, you know, triple digits is hot. So
yeah, but the Oregon coast, a lot more humid there, and they're used to the 60s.
Yeah, and it was about 70-ish there.
Oh, so it wasn't upper 90s?
That was, I guess, in the Portland area.
Oh, okay, yeah. Once you get inland, it gets a bit warmer. But, yeah, the coast, 60s, if it gets in the mid-70s, people are stripping their clothes off. They're all, you know, they're all sweaty.
They are, and it's interesting the difference of people, and you really get spoiled as far as the people here in Idaho. And you know, I don't know if it's the cannabis effect in Oregon. Hopefully it won't be legalized as far as not medically, but for recreational use. That's on the ballot in November. But the people there, you know, they're nice and stuff, but they're very, you know, mellow, and, you know, they kind of chill out, and not the same vibe that you get here in Idaho. You really get spoiled with the people here.
Yeah, you know, that it, for me, and I guess, you know, it depends on what you like, but for me, that's, I like it here. Every time I leave, I'm happy to get home.
Yeah, it was interesting, and like I said, it was it's been a while since I've been to a beach-like community, so you have that vibe itself, people riding bicycles, road construction going on. It was the first time I actually saw, what is it, the seals or the sea lions there.
Oh, uh-huh, yep.
Yeah, and it was funny because they, you know, go on a whale watch, and I kind of could have done that, but Mrs. Miller didn't want to do that. So
the whale watch?
The whale watch. She's done that before. And, mm-hmm. you know, you kind of walk around, and you look for things at the little shops and stuff. But I really liked the sea lions, right? Is that what they are?
They are. They are right. Sea lions.
I really kind of could just hang out all day there watching them.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing. Did you go into the sea lion caves or just watching them on the coast?
Just watched them on the coast there, you know, the dock where they all hang out.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. There's a place called the Sea Lion Caves there, and when you go through the, you know, the trying to get into the place, there's pictures of them everywhere, and then you go and you pay the big bucks to go down into it, and it's the same thing you see as the pictures everywhere. So you get out and you think, why did I spend all that money? I could have just looked at the pictures and called it good.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of strange there seeing it. I really liked not only the sea lions, but I mean, it's almost indescribable. It was just such a different vibe, and you know, you're so used to tents, and you go there, and well, I want to go walk on the beach. And it's funny because many people, they don't go in the water. Nobody goes in the water.
On the Oregon coast?
Right.
It's because it's cold.
Well, I was worried. Well,
and dangerous.
What do you mean dangerous?
The riptide on the Oregon coast is really dangerous.
Well, now you tell me.
Yeah, you get out there very deep, you can get sucked out and can't get back in.
Well, that's probably why people weren't doing it. Mm-hmm. See, this kind of reminded me of Hampton Beach in New Hampshire, which is a kid I went to and hung out and had a good time. Cold water and stuff, but so what? So I went in, I got in waist deep and stuff, but I was worried about the sharks getting me.
Yeah, there are great whites off the Oregon coast.
Yeah.
So there are sharks. If you're waist deep, you're okay, unless a log sneaks up behind you, which they call sneakers and sneaker waves, and they come up and knock you down. But, it can get a bit dangerous. If you get up chest deep, it can suck you right out.
Well, I could see that because I could even feel my legs being pulled when I was about waist deep. And, mm-hmm. Then I decided I was working on my own old defensive back skills. You know, you'd run up to the waves and then backpedal.
Oh, yeah.
I was never really a defensive back, but, I had a dream once. So all of a sudden, I go down by the rocks, and I'm sitting there doing that. And all of a sudden, here comes this big wave, and, you think to yourself, oh, I can take it. Wiped me right out, psh, hoodie and all, drenched.
That's nice.
It was a good time.
But it is. Oregon coast is great. Lincoln City, one of my favorite spots to go. So it's a lot of fun. But, yeah, it's interesting. We had, liners that would play, you're listening to the best of Kevin Miller stuff. And then people would email me going, how come Kevin's a repeat? It's like, we just told you. It's a replay.
Yeah, they don't like that.
Yeah, but, everybody's got to get a break, clear their head for a bit. With as negative as the news is, you just have to clear your head once in a while.
Even the president.
Oh, yeah, his head's pretty clear.
Yeah, you just wonder about that whole James Foley thing. And the golf and the 8 rounds of golf and nobody's defending him. And now we're having drone strikes over Syria. And whether or not Putin was right when he said, you may not want to get rid of Assad over there in Syria because the rebels are worse than he is.
Yeah. it's one of those things that, and I remember there were those. I know Glenn Beck said it at the time that interesting that... Putin and the president on opposite sides, but could Putin be right as far as who to back on the whole thing?
Well, Glenn Beck was right about everything.
Was he?
No, he was right about the caliphate, and I know mm-hmm. you're close to Glenn Beck. You know me, I'm kind of like, eh. But Glenn Beck should get all the credit in the world for that. He was so right about that, and people gave him a hard time.
Yeah, it just makes you wonder. Then listening again, it was coast to coast overnight, but they're saying, who's backing ISIS anyway? Who is the one who really wants them to succeed? Follow the money trail. Who is it that really wants them to succeed? So
I guess it's the Iranians.
Is it?
Well, yeah, it's that Shia brand, if you will.
Because
they're backing the Iraqi government.
Yeah. So who is it that's backing them? Where's the money? And if there is a money trail, which, it's an organized operation. There's got to be a lot of money. Why can't that money be tracked? And if it's in a bank, freeze it.
Well, remember, they stole all the money from the First Bank of Mosul. It was like $450 million or billion, something like that.
So they got all that cash there.
They did.
Is that enough to do it?
Well, I know it's not the Saudis, but...
Is it? Or isn't it? Did they give them money to say, leave us alone?
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, they do that with everybody.
Yeah, it's the leave me alone money, which we don't have enough of that here to keep, management off of us. But, it's the leave me alone money.
Leave me alone money. Wouldn't that be good? I think that there's another term for that, but I can't really say it.
Yeah, not this you is know a family-friendly show.
You know what I'm talking about, though, right?
Of course I do.
Yes.
Of course I do.
Yes. It's what everybody dreams of getting. How about this West Ada levy going down?
Yeah, I kind of wondered, too, a lot of people confused going, what's West Ada School District?
Right.
So changing the name may have confused some people from the old Meridian Joint District to the West Ada. I mean, there's several times that I caught it in the news. It's like, oh, that's right. They changed the name. So,
yeah.
That are people just saying enough. I guess you had to get my taxes.
I guess you had to get 2/3, so.
Yeah, and that is the deal in some of these levies. You got to get 2/3, and that's... It's a tough thing to do when pretty much votes are normally split about 50-50.
Well, are we going to see, we're going to have to lay somebody off, dot, dot, dot.
I guess we'll find out that or they revamp it and run at it again.
Well, they've been known to do that. Also on the front page of the Statesman, we have former military gear is popular in Idaho. What do you make of that when you see an MRAP coming down your street?
Well, you know what I find funny is, and as you watch the Today Show yesterday, you may have been traveling, I don't know, they were doing big stories about the police using tanks. Okay, number one, they're not tanks. Tanks have a turret and shoot shells. They are armored vehicles. If let's take Ferguson, for example, Missouri. If I had somebody hurt in the behind the, you know, the rioting crowd, I would want one of those vehicles to go in to protect me to get them out.
Right.
I mean, I don't have a problem with it. But, the media, it's like the Today Show. Tanks, you know, police departments are using tanks. They're not tanks. Sorry, a tank has a turret and shoots shells.
Jeez.
But that's just me. That's just my opinion. So I'm good with it.
Hmm. Well, we got that going on. Anything else? The big game coming up. Everybody's going crazy about college football.
It's college football week, and people are going nutsos about college football. Of course, we started with Eastern Washington. They look good, by the way. Eastern Washington. They started out with Eastern Washington. You got Boise State tomorrow night. So, you know, people all excited about that game. We'll see where it goes. I know there's some people saying they think that... you know, they think Boise State might sneak by Ole Miss. There's others saying, nope, not even going to be close. So, I don't know. You know, we'll see. It's on ESPN, so you can catch that, I think, 6 o'clock game time on Thursday night. So, we'll find out what happens. What say your SEC people?
They believe that Ole Miss is, you know, pretty good. And, of course, mm-hmm. they said that about Georgia, and I said that about Virginia Tech. But it will be... it'll be an interesting dynamic for Coach Harsin there. He's done all the right things. He's reached out to the high school kids. He's actively recruited the state. He's said the right things. But, you know, Ole Miss is a tough one. It's a tough one, and you don't have Kellen Moore. I think that, again, there's a theory that somebody told me a long time ago. You know, every great college coach has their one quarterback. It's very rare that you have two in a career, and for Pete, it was Kellen Moore. For Philip Fulmer, it was Peyton Manning, even though he, in fact, you know, won the national title the year after Peyton left with Tim mm-hmm. Martin. And for Urban Meyer, it was Tim Tebow. So I think that plays into the equation. You know, you've got this kid, apparently, Bo Bridges, no, something, the quarterback for Ole Miss,
mm-hmm.
who had a bum shoulder last year. And all we've heard about is that he is going to be the best ever. But with Boise State, if they roll like they should, you're probably... you know, they'll come up with a creative scheme.
I think you'll see that. I think you're going to see stuff that has not been seen or is a bit different than in the past. You know, Nebraska made a living off of having offenses that nobody could figure out for years.
So, I love Nebraska. The old Nebraska teams in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. Nobody could figure that stuff out. So it'll be exciting to see as Boise State gets ready to... Well, they are in Ole Miss. They all took off yesterday, so they're there now. Actually, they're not at Ole Miss or Georgia, at the Georgia Dome. What's interesting is 40,000 tickets sold, about 3,000 Boise State fans, and not a lot of Ole Miss fans. You know, the crowd, which I think plays to Boise State's favor. If that place was full, what does it hold, 70,000?
70,000, yeah.
Yeah, if that place was full of Ole Miss fans screaming at Boise State, that'd be very different. But where you got the upper deck empty... I think that plays to Boise State's favor that Ole Miss, they're not supporting their team.
Yeah, I would say Ole Miss, you know, they're not Georgia. They're not mm-hmm. Not Mississippi State. Gee, only 40,000 tickets sold. That's not going to look good for TV.
No, that's not going to be, you know, they're going to have to, ESPN's going to have to do the camera angle thing. Don't hit the upper balcony. Don't do that. We want to make it look like a big deal.
It's hard to believe that the Georgia Dome will be done in a couple of years. They're building an entirely new one.
Yeah. Interesting article in the Statesman talking about ESPN analysts saying Boise State games versus the big boys. That could be a thing of the past with the Big Five and the way they got all those conferences put together now. Could be the end of that.
Well, you see a lot of the Big Five conferences scheduling each other. You've got, what is it, West Virginia, Alabama. You've got mm-hmm. Alabama in a couple of years going to USC at the Jerry Dome. You've got LSU, Wisconsin. You've got a lot of the conferences intermingling. And, look, that's been the problem for the Broncos for a long time. And you and I have disagreed on this, which is shocking. But do you think that Gene Blehmeyer made the right choice when he always wanted to get the one and ones? Or should he have been a little bit more flexible? Let's just say Nebraska, for instance. Would it have done Boise State well to go 2-for-1, even though, I mean, they'd make a ton of money? Lincoln's a beautiful stadium, but I mean, did they make a mistake by not doing more of those?
I think in the long run, it doesn't matter, does it now? You know, the Big Five is shutting them out. So I think in the long run, it doesn't matter. I would have liked to seen the 2-for-1s. You know, tough when you have 35,000 seats to get the revenue you need to bring in Nebraska. So it might take a 2-for-1 to do that. But then you always also run the risk if you do a 2-for-1 that they cancel your one. So you always have that risk as well.
Right. But on the other hand, you know, when you're a stadium with 70,000 people versus 30-some thousand, you know, the revenue game. By the way, a Spirit of Boise Balloon Classic underway. How about that Channel 7? They're in Atlanta and at Ann Morrison Park simultaneously.
Oh, I know. They've got their resources stretched. they are stretched. Speaking of stretched, got to do your traffic now as you're coming out of Canyon County. And
John Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And 557, Kevin Miller with you here. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Taking a look at what happened yesterday, the West Ada School District's attempt to ease overcrowding with new schools failed to get the two-thirds majority needed for passage Tuesday. This is from Bill Roberts of The Statesman. Linda Clark, district superintendent, said there's now only one solution to ease crowded schools. We will have to run it again, and we will have to work harder. So, you know, this is an issue that we'll talk about at 6:05 here. Dave Burnett mentioned it earlier in the Manly Man segment. Okay, the people voted. The people voted, and they said no. And we saw this in CUNA. We saw, by the way, in CUNA, Michael Hall, he kept his gig. Many people thought that he would get it, but that did not happen. But when you think about this, actually Michael Law, not Michael Hall, the voters voted. Does that count for anything anymore? Does that really count for anything anymore when we're talking about and discussing money and how you spend your money? Apparently, it was, what, 62.7% in favor, 37.2% against it. Turnout was very light, Clark said, about 10% of eligible voters. Well, if people have the opportunity, my friends, my Romans, my countrymen, to vote and they don't vote, well, that's just how it is, right? I mean, we're getting ready for this tomorrow.
Go enjoy your beer and ride your ATV and watch sports. We'll run the country.
There you go. And, you know, so we'll talk about that coming up. Also, do you want military vehicles in your backyard? Why do Idaho police departments love military vehicles? Let's talk about it next. Kevin Miller, 580KIDO. Time for traffic with Dave. It's fall. Fall is in the season. 57 in Boise right now. Coming up, when voters say no, should that be the end of it? We hear from the West Ada School District that they will continue on with the levy. We'll talk about that. Plus, are you comfortable with an MRAP next door to you? Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Serving Emmett, Idaho.